episode 354 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And this is Nick.
And this is a Phoenix Files episode. Finally got approval from DC to let you all listen to the last three interviews that I did at Phoenix Fan Fest. The Brian Azzarello one, I don't really think that was a hang-up. We just talked very, very briefly. It's a really short interview. We just talk a little bit about his collaboration with one of my favorite artists, Lee Bermejo, and their upcoming Batman Damned series for the Black Label imprint at DC. But then also spoke with James Tynan about his detective run and a little bit about the upcoming Justice League Dark. So I think DC wanted to wait until Justice League came out this week, since we did have that little Justice League Dark piece in that interview. Also, likewise with Joshua Williamson, who I spoke to, where you'll hear the interview in the episode. We talked mostly about Flash and Flash War, but again, at the end, I couldn't resist asking him a little bit about Justice League Odyssey. So again, I think DC wanted to wait to make sure that we didn't release these interviews until after Justice League had been released. So not that they gave any spoilers, not that I fished for any spoilers. As you longtime listeners will know, I'm more about trying to entice everybody to actually read the books than giving away spoiler things, which is why we always try to wait and don't necessarily talk about things right when we find them out. But before we get into all of those interviews, because a few items of note concerning DC. Bit of news that came out last week, and then one that came out on the 7th of June. I knew the news that came out last week would be of particular interest to Nick, and I keep forgetting to ask him about it, and that is Hellblazer canceled at DC Comics.
And why? Like, is it going to show up somewhere else? Like, in this Vertigo thing we're about to talk about, or?
That's a possibility. When this got announced, it broke on the 31st of May. It looks like July will be the final issue of Hellblazer, at least for now. With July's Hellblazer 24, there are no new issues of the book. Writer Tim Seeley has confirmed the news, writing on Twitter that he got brought on in the first place to end the book. So they knew a long time ago that it was ending. But I mean, he came on at like issue 12. So they gave him like a full year to bring it. Hey, we're going to end the book. We're giving you 12 issues. So you make a good point, right? Like, you make a creative change like that. Okay, let's bring Tim Seeley on the book. He might turn it around completely, and it might be doing gangbusters in sales. So to cancel something that far in advance, regardless of how the sales are doing, you're not going to know how they're doing. It may hint to something like some future plans for the character. Okay,
Why he wasn't in Justice League Dark, because he's the main player in the new 52's Justice League Dark. So like, this is adding to the mystery, I would say.
Maybe he's going to join the regular Justice League. Maybe he's going to get killed in Justice League.
It'd be worth it. Maybe if they're going to do something that powerful with the character, I'm okay with it.
Maybe we'll finally have a break from John Constantine. I mean, there hasn't been a very long period of time where we have had no John Constantine. I mean, he had like a 200 and something issue run. Was it two? Do you know when the first Hellblazer Vertigo title, did it end in the 250s or the 290s?
I'm not sure. I've only read literally the first volume with A Feast of Friends, which is still my favorite story, and then like the more recent stuff.
I want to say it was in the 290s. I mean, it was up there. Anyway, it's ending.
I think he's past Batman as my favorite DC character.
It's ending. I knew you'd be upset, but again,
at least he's all over TV.
He is going to be in that Black Label book. He is going to be in Batman Damned.
I'm going to have to get my friend to add that book.
So, and I think that's going to be a one shot. I can't remember. Maybe it's a six issue.
Because with DC Vertigo, isn't part of that doing a Sandman universe? Because Constantine came from the pages of Sandman or Swamp Thing, part of the Sandman universe, right? Isn't that all related?
I don't know how much. you'd say Hellblazer and Swamp Thing were related to Sandman. I mean, yeah, they were all Vertigo books. That's about the most you could say. And they, you're right, they are rebooting.
Because it makes sense to release Hellblazer or Constantine as a Vertigo book now they're doing this.
That's true. But and it may be that... see, man, if you look at the other bit of news that we're going to talk about, it may be that, you want Hellblazer, you want John Constantine as part of that imprint, but he doesn't necessarily fit in with the initial wave of titles. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the other big news that dropped today, and that's DC announcing that Vertigo is back. It's returning to its roots with a line-wide relaunch and DC Vertigo rebrand, all headed up by executive editor Mark Doyle. So there are 7 titles that they announced today. There's, 4 monthly series will launch this fall winter. The remaining titles will follow in 2019. So we've got Border Town from writer Eric Esquivel with art and covers by Ramon Villalobos. And that's about a crack in the border between worlds that releases army of monsters from Mexican folklore into a small town in Arizona. And the residents, of course, blame the illegal aliens. So supernaturally charged racial tension. Next, we have Hexwives from writer Ben Blacker. Art by Mirko Andolfo. Really excited about this one. Blacker describes it as he's somewhat inspired by Bewitched. And so it has to do with some malevolent men who have a conspiracy to brainwash a coven of witches to be subservient suburban housewives. But it's only a matter of time before the women remember their power. So on Twitter today, Blacker was talking about being inspired by Bewitched. He's like, why would a witch with all these powers choose to just be a housewife, right? Like a la Samantha and Bewitched. That's love right there, right? That's dedication to Darren. So he's looking at it the other way. Like, what if she was brainwashed and then one day her eyes were open, so to speak? This is probably the one that I'm looking forward to the most. This next title, Nick probably as well, because it's by one of our favorite writers. It's American Carnage from writer Brian Hill with art by Leandro Fernandez. And I'll just read the solicit directly. In the thrilling crime saga, disgraced FBI agent Richard Wright, who is biracial but can pass for white, goes undercover in a white supremacist group believed to be responsible for the death of a fellow agent. So, true crime, a little bit of Incognito, if any of you are familiar with that title from Dark Horse, which has to do with a reporter in either the 20s or 30s who's biracial and can go on undercover as a white person because he's so light-skinned. So it's got that angle.
So, I like that. Does this mean Vertigo is kind of moving in a less superhero-y direction and more...
Vertigo originally was always was not about superheroes.
But like Preacher's Vertigo, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a superhero. And Constantine, even in the New 52, is always talking about how he hates capes because he's not a superhero.
Right.
But our friend Brian Edward Hill's book sounds like it doesn't even have superpowers in it.
No, not at all.
Like, no powers of any sort. Not even a superstitious element to it, which is interesting. Direction to be moving.
And
that sounds great.
Being that he did such a great job on Postal, which is kind of a... you know, real crime kind of thing, true crime thing. It fills me with hope as well. Next up, we have Goddess Mode from writer Zoe Quinn with art by Robbie Rodriguez, who I've never been a big fan of his art. So we'll see. And Zoe Quinn, she's never written any comics before. This will be her first comics work. But this sounds super interesting to me. In a near future where all of humanity's needs are administered by godlike AI, it's one young woman's horrible job to do tech support on it. But when Cassandra finds herself violently drawn into a hidden and deadly digital world beneath our own, she discovers a group of superpowered women and horrific monsters locked in a secret war for the cheat codes to reality. I love that term, the cheat codes to reality.
That's cool.
And being the fact that I work IT tech support often as part of my IT gig, maybe that's why this kind of appeals to me. I know what it is to, you know, ask that question. Have you tried turning it off and turning it back
on? Turned it off and on again. Have they announced what these books will be, like, what age they're aimed at? Because classic Vertigo is more adult than DC, right? I'm so sure. You think they're going back to that?
I'm sure it'll be mature readers.
So they're going back to more adult books, which is why I'd love to see Constantine show back up under DC Vertigo.
Next up, we have High Level from writer Rob Sheridan, former art director for Nine Inch Nails, with art by Barnaby Bagenda. He's most known for his work on Omega Men with Tom King. Hundreds of years after the world ended and human society was rebuilt from scratch, a self-interested smuggler with a price on her head is forced to traverse a new continent of danger and mystery to deliver a child messiah to High Level, a mythical city at the top of the world from which no one has ever returned. That one, I'm pretty indifferent. It might be good, might not. I'll probably check out the first issue. Next up, we have Safe Sex from writer Tina Horn. Again, this is first...
Definitely more adult.
first comic work. She is the host / producer of Why Are People Into That podcast. And a writer, journalist, lecturer in sexual education and activism, and art by Mike Dowling, whose art was really spectacular. He did the Unfollow series from Rob Williams that was a Vertigo title that was really awesome. So this is a dystopian sci-fi thriller about a ragtag team of sex workers fighting for the freedom to love in a world where sexual pleasure is monitored, regulated, and policed by the government. That sounds like something that our beloved current commander-in-chief would be in favor of and introduce to be regulated and probably taxed. And finally, we have The Second Coming from writer Mark Russell. Just based on the fact it's Mark Russell and his Flintstone series was so critically acclaimed, this has me interested. Plus, the premise just sounds really goofy and fun. Art is by Richard Pace. God sends Jesus to Earth in hopes that he will learn the family trade from Sun Man, an all-powerful superhero who is a varsity quarterback son God never had. But upon his return to Earth, Christ is appalled to discover what has become of his gospel and vows to set the record right. So Mark Doyle says it's time to rebuild DC Vertigo, returning to our roots, spotlighting some exciting new voices in comics, as well as bringing new voices into comics from the corners of television, games, music, activism, podcasting, other comics, and more. All our creators are passionate, have something to say. These are sophisticated stories with new characters, vast worlds to explore. And that's what it's always been about for me. New stories, new voices, new possibilities. It's a new generation of DC Vertigo classics for readers of all genres. So it's kind of the second – this is kind of the third go-round for Vertigo. They tried to kind of rebrand, relaunch a few years ago, and it didn't quite take. When Shelley Bond was still there. So really, this is the third go-round, you think about it. They had the first one initially that did pretty well, but then things like the rise of Image as far as a great spot to take your creator-owned stuff, you know, it just was a better deal. You didn't have to share as much of the profits like you did if you were doing creator-owned stuff at Vertigo. So that kind of hurt it. It got watered down and, you know, Sandman ended, and yeah, it just lost some of its luster. And so that was the first go around. Then, like I said, they tried another kind of a soft reboot when Shelley Bond was there, and it didn't quite take off. I don't know that. I think they, you know, they continued some older titles, and they were trying to have some newer titles come on, and it didn't. It sounds like this time, like everything's ending, and they're restarting everything from scratch. DC Vertigo used to mean something, and I think they're trying to capture that magic and the cachet of the name. Once again, so a couple of these sound really, really great. A couple of them I have little to no interest in, like Border Town. I probably won't pick that up at all. It just doesn't interest me at all.
I'd love to read the first issue of each.
Yeah, maybe.
Just give it a chance. But again, this universe does not sound like a universe where they plan on bringing back Constantine. So hopefully he has big plans for him in the Justice League or Batman or something.
But that's the thing, right? Like they may be – I mean, you can't really think of this as an interconnected universe. Like the first Vertigo wasn't really like, Swamp Thing was in it, Animal Man was in it, Hellblazer was in it, John Constantine. Those three books may have crossed over once in a while, but it was, you know, a lot of the Vertigo stuff wasn't, you know, like Transmetropolitan and all that kind of stuff. That wasn't necessarily crossing over. So it may be that this is like the initial wave of first titles they're announcing. And it may be that, yeah, they're planning on bringing a Constantine book back so they can tell more mature stories at a later point, like maybe mid 2019.
Oh, I don't want to wait that long.
Sorry, man. In the meantime, maybe you'll get him in Batman Damned.
I will take it any cost. And I'm getting him on Legend of Tomorrow, which I'm going to start watching next season only because Constantine's a series regular now.
Well, there you go. So. Although Batman, I think Batman Damned is going to be 2019 as well.
Oh no, you're keep crushing my heart.
I'm sorry. Well, that's going to do it for this little new section of the episode. So please keep listening. As I said at the top, we've got interviews with Brian Azzarello, James Tynan, and Joshua Williamson coming up for you from Phoenix Comic Fest. Thanks to all those creators for joining me and talking about their work. And thanks to all you listeners for supporting and tuning in. Numbers continue to increase. I don't know if you'd told me at the beginning of the year that I would have believed you that we would be going daily and we would be all the way through June and not miss an episode. And I even if I would have bought that, what I would not have believed is that we could have increased listenership every month of the year from January through June. So thank you. I can't thank you enough. Numbers keep climbing. So what that tells me is not only are you guys all listening, you're telling your friends about the podcast and they're listening too. And again, we really appreciate it. And if you haven't told one of your comic reading friends about it, then what are you waiting for? Why not share what we do? Again, our philosophy here at the Comic Source is there is a comic story out there for everyone, even if they don't realize it. And really what we want to do is talk about as many different stories and titles as we can, good books that are out there, so we can try to match up the right comic for the right reader. And what we really, really hope to do and aspire to do is match up the right comic to a person who discovers comics through that perfect story. So again, thanks for listening. Don't forget, we'll be at Denver Comic Con. Come and look us up so you can get your free lanyard and tell us how you found out about the podcast and chat us up and we'll give you a shout out on the episode, probably take a picture and throw it on Instagram and all that kind of good stuff. So thanks for listening, everybody. Don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Be sure and check out all the pop culture coverage over there on TVs and movies. Twitter.com/TheComicSource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. And as always, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
All right, this is Jace coming to you live from the floor of Phoenix Comic Fest, and I'm with writer Brian Azzarello. Brian, thank you for joining me.
You're welcome.
Just so you know, Jace.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your upcoming project for DC Black Label, Batman Damned.
Sure. I'm doing it with Lee Bermejo again. It's... Yeah, if you want to call it the sequel to Joker, you can call it the sequel to Joker.
So, fair enough.
Yeah, it's a supernatural story.
But it's outside regular DC continuity, just like your Joker story was that you did with me.
I guess, if you say so.
Well, really, that Black Label line is a way to give creators the freedom to tell stories regardless of anything else DC really has going on, right? You enjoy that freedom as a writer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the continuity stuff is it's really not my bag.
Right. Now, you mentioned Joker with Lee Bermejo, so this is another project. Is it like going home, working with Lee on a project again?
Oh, it's great to be working with Lee again. Yeah. I mean, this is our fifth or sixth project that we've done together. I find myself, like, working with the same people over and over again because we establish relationships.
Right.
And it's just like, I want to work with friends. You know, more so than the characters. Like, I really don't, you know, care about what character we were doing, but if we have an idea for something, it's like, yeah, let's do it. Let's work together again.
He has a very visceral style.
Yes, he does.
And you feel like that suits the kind of stories that you want to tell?
Oh, yeah. I think so. Sure. Yeah, we make a good team.
And really, I also feel like maybe sometimes you take Batman a little darker, or you want to explore the shadows. And again, Lee's art seems suited for that. What is it specifically about Lee's art you think that suits that?
I think that we both have the same sort of desire to do something new rather than just do something again.
Right.
You know, it's like, let's, if we have something new we can tell about the character, let's do that story. Otherwise, you know, we won't do it.
Right. You know?
I think that's why we kind of stay away from, both he and I sort of stay away from the continuity stuff.
Right.
You know, I guess we're selfish. We don't want, you know, we don't like to play with others.
Well, as long as it's in service to the story, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah,
no, there isn't. I mean, if you want to get your continuity Batman, there's plenty of titles you can buy.
Right.
You know, if you want like a self-contained story that more sort of explores what psychologically means to be him, then you come and look at what we're doing.
Right, and that kind of exploration is really at the heart of what you've always done with that.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like every time I've written him, I've looked at him a different way. I don't think I've ever written him the same way twice, you know? The Batman in Broken City is definitely different than the Batman that we're doing in Damned, and it's different from the Dark Knight Batman, too. So.
And Lee's such a great storyteller. He's done things like Suiciders and We Are Robin. So being that he's written stuff as well, do you find that there's a good interplay between the two of you? Is there back and forth with story?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was just, a few weeks ago, I was over in Italy, and we were working out the last bit of the story together, just like bouncing ideas. Oh, yeah. We work pretty closely together.
Yeah, that's awesome. And he's beyond, like you said, beyond being a great creator, it's great to work with your friend. I mean, he's such a great guy.
So. Yeah.
All right, well, I really appreciate you taking the time, Brian.
Are there
any other projects that you have on the stands now that I know Moonshine's
Moonshine with Eduardo, we're doing that in Image. I'm also going to be doing, I just finished up, well, not just, Three Floyd's Alpha King, which was a kind of a barbarian fantasy thing with about beer that I did with Three Floyds Brewing, and we're about to begin our next series, and that's called Space Station Middle Finger.
That's awesome. Well, great. Brian, if there's any fans or listeners that want to follow along social media with your work,
I'm on Twitter and I'm on Instagram. I think it's just my name. I'm pretty sure it's just my name. Yeah, my name all together, Brian Azzarello.
Great. And listeners, I'll put links to both of those accounts in the show notes so you can go and check them out there.
All right.
Thanks so much for your time, Brian.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right, this is Jace coming to you live from Phoenix Comic Fest once again. I'm here with writer James Tynan. First of all, let me say congratulations on your detective run. We first spoke about it a couple years ago at Long Beach. You were super excited. Couldn't tell me what it was. Just told me it was like your dream job. So it was an incredible run. So
thank you.
Congratulations. Do you feel like overall looking back on it as a whole story, you really were telling one big story? Did you hit all the notes you wanted that young James would have loved? Are you pleased with it?
I pretty much did. Like, there are always a few things you have to kind of leave on the shelf and, like, darlings you have to kill just to make the story make sense and all flow. I would have liked to play more with, Harper Row, Bluebird. I would have liked to get back to the Court of Owls. I would have, there's a whole, like, another, League of Shadows storyline that I would have loved to do. But at the same time, like, when I reached the end of the story, I knew I had reached it. And that was something that it was just like, you know, I was gearing up for all of everything that was happening in the DC universe that we're going to be working on this year and next. And it just sort of became clear, this is the perfect moment for me to step back and kind of just like, you know, let the book go. You know, I'm insanely proud of it.
So really, I consider you a veteran writer now. That's something you probably had to learn, right? Like, when you got to be able to say, this is the end for now.
Absolutely. Like, you know, the larger story, and I've written a little bit about this, is the larger story I was telling was very much a Tim and Kate story. It was about Red Robin, it was about Batwoman, and doing those two, like, telling their stories, this was the culmination of all of that. This is the culmination of sort of seeing the pluses and minuses of each of their visions of Gotham, and their relationships to Batman. So that was where it started, and that's really where the story needed to end when that was resolved.
Right. Let me ask about fan reaction. Was there any of the fan reaction that surprised you, either positive or negative, or just where you were like, I didn't think the fans were gonna have that kind of idea about the story?
The biggest surprise in the entire story, honestly, and it was a surprise to me writing it as well, was Clayface. Like, Clayface was a character that, you know, when we brought him into the book, it was like, on one hand, it was just to vary up the, you know, the silhouette of the team. It was to make sure that we had one character that didn't just look like a street ninja style character. And then when I brought him in, I kind of thought, like, oh, he'll end up being kind of a, like, sad sack comic relief. But I didn't really feel the pathos until I started writing him. And then it wasn't until creating the friendship between him and Cassandra Cain that I really saw the full potential of the character, and then seeing people really, really respond to that was incredibly gratifying, because that was me sort of following the characters telling me, like, where they wanted to go, right. It worked, and the fans seemed to really respond to it.
Yeah, you also put forth some really interesting ideas, especially for a superhero book, like violence begets violence, right? And victims' rights. How was the fan reaction for those things? Did it seem like they were interesting ideas that fans were ready to think about and talk about?
The fans are, like, that's an interesting question. And fans, like, definitely, like, there are different sets of fans. There are some fans who I know had issues with my run because I kind of, like, I let Batman lose at various points. Like, Batman is there as a kind of focal point of the story, but the main characters are the supporting characters around them, which also allow Batman to kind of confront some of the, like, some of his failures. And some readers don't want Batman to confront his failures, and some readers really don't want teenage girls to tell him that he's failing at a thing. But honestly, the response has been really incredible. And even when there have been moments where people, you know, have been skeptical with a move, like, I said very, very early on, like, going back to one of, like, the first arc, when people started to get wind that something bad might happen to Tim Drake, like, I was just like, y'all just need to trust me.
Right.
Like, I love these characters. Like, trust my love of these characters and that I'm going to do right by them and come along in the journey. And thankfully, like, people did.
Cool. Well, now that it's all said and done, would you go back and do another Batman run, detective, solo?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Like, Gotham is, like, such a rich tapestry of characters. I'm excited to play in a different toy box for a while. I'm excited to work work outside of the Bat characters and play with a bunch of other characters who I've known and I've been reading and loving since I was a kid. But, like, the one thing that in all of the Batman writing I've done, I don't feel like I've done, is I still haven't told a Batman story. I still haven't told a Bruce Wayne right in the center seat, like, big Batman story. And at some point I want to tell that. I'm not saying that that's happening 6 months from now, a year from now, like, 3 years from now. But at some point in my career, I do want to get back and and really tell a Bruce story. And then there are definitely characters that came out of Detective that, you know, have stories that I would still love to tell. But, you know, like, so yes, like, I can 100% see going back and doing all of that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'd love, because like you said, you've never done solo Batman. You did this Batman team book, which was awesome, but love to see your take on Batman. And you mentioned Tim Drake earlier. I know he's your Robin.
Yes.
You know, your favorite, the one you grew up reading. Same with me. And he was really a big part of your run, and you really focused on the things that make him great. And now you're kind of putting that toy back in the toy box, so to speak.
Yes.
But as a fan, can I ask, where would you like to see Tim Drake go from here?
I mean, I want Tim to kind of make his own way. Like, I think that you need... it's hard to say because I have a few inklings about what DC is actually going to do with it, and I am do with the character, and I'm very excited about those decisions. So I don't want to hint towards
right.
them. But
fair
honestly,
enough.
It's Tim is a character who I love dearly, and I'm excited to read him as a fan again, and to not really have control over what they end up doing with him. Like, you know, it's hard giving up that control, but at the same time, it's also invigorating because, you know, for the last, like, 7 years, a lot of Batman stories I haven't been able to read as a fan because I've
right.
been there a part of the scenes. It was the tie-ins to The Wedding that was the first time in 5+ years that there was a Batman event that I was not a part of. And it was just like, that was a kind of like, oh, I'm out of Gotham now.
I could just enjoy this.
But, and I'm really excited to read that story. I'm really excited to read whatever is in store for Tim next. And, I think fans will be very happy.
Well, again, knowing what a huge fan you are of Tim, if you're excited for what's coming, I know it's going to be good. let's change gears here. You mentioned your next thing. So it's Justice League Dark, exploring the magical corner of the DC Universe. I believe the first issue comes out July 25th. May 30th is the last issue of Justice League No Justice, and then we've got 2 issues of Justice League in June to kind of, you know, open that door.
Yeah.
And I was just talking to Scott Snyder, talking about, so Justice League No Justice is kind of the central story that you and him and Joshua Williams are telling, and then you're gonna split off and tell, it's still a story that's interconnected, but you're each going to take your own little corner from
yes.
that seed story of Justice League No Justice,
yes.
pun intended. But you're excited to work in a different corner, right? With these
yes.
magical characters.
No, next to Gotham, the magic horror characters of the DC Universe are the characters I am the biggest fans of, like, the biggest fan of, and I love the most. Like, you know, when the first time I read books of magic in high school, it, like, completely blew me away. Digging through all of Alan Moore's Saga of the Swamp Thing, of all of Hellblazer, like, I was a Vertigo intern. That was my first like professional job in comics, and that came very much out of my love for the dark, scary corner of DC. Now that those characters are back, a part of the DC universe, I wanna tell a horror story. Like, that is that's the real goal. Like, this is, you know, there's, you know, Justice League Odyssey is the big cosmic, like, Western space adventure. Justice League Dark is, I want to be the scariest DC comic. And so that's what I'm setting out to do. And working with Alvaro Martinez, who is one of my favorite artists working on he was one of my favorite artists to work with in the whole Detective run. He did some, like, Detective 975 is probably my favorite issue in that entire run, and he was the artist there, and is a huge part of why that's my favorite issue. That I am very, very excited about this book.
I'm excited too. See, this is the thing, when I talk to you, you say things like Batman team book, and immediately I'm in. You say Justice League horror, I'm in. So good luck with it. I know that your collaboration with Joshua and Scott will continue, and you guys are really just flipping the entire DC universe on its head with the source wall breaking and what happens at the end of No Justice. So best of luck with the title. Anything else you want to share with our listeners?
No, that should be everything, but thank you so much.
You bet. And if anyone of our listeners wants to follow along social media, where's the best place to find them?
At James the Fourth, all spelled out.
Great. And I'll put links to the social media in the show notes, everybody, so you'll be able to follow James's work and know when everything's coming out. So.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, this is Jace coming to you once again live from the floor of Phoenix Comic Fest, here with writer Joshua Williamson. Josh, it's always great to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too, man.
How you been?
I'm good. I'm tired, but I'm good.
That's great. So I want to talk a little bit about Flash War.
Mm-hmm.
Got the first issue, part one. Well, we had a prelude, now part one.
Yep.
For our listeners who may not be familiar with Flash War, give us a quick summary. What's Flash War all about?
Flash War is about Barry and Wally. And, you know, for the first time, really having a major conflict between these two characters. About a year ago, Iris killed Eobard Thawne, right? And then she just came home. There was, like, no repercussions for that. So you have that going on. Then you have Wally, who returned from being trapped in the Speed Force during DC, you know, Universe number one. And since then, he's been kind of lost. And we know there's a lot of things that are missing from before. They were missing, you know, pre-Flashpoint that haven't been found. And so Wally's been kind of lost ever since, right? Like, even though he's been here, he's still kind of lost. Like, he didn't fully come back. And so what's going on is that there's been this, these renegades from the future. They're basically like the anti-reverse Flash task force. But they're almost like an homage to the Rogues. They came back in time to find Iris, and that caused a conflict between Barry and Wally initially, because they were like, well, Barry's saying, like, well, let's try and figure this out. Wally's like, no, we're not letting, letting him take her. But you really find out this has all been a big plan by Hunter Zolomon to manipulate Wally to break the Speed Force. He wants Barry and Wally to fight each other to see who's the best Flash.
Now, this is really a side of Wally that we haven't seen before, right? But I think that people need to understand that he's also going through something with those missing memories that he never has before. I mean, how would you react if memories were popping up randomly, you didn't know what to believe? You know, it's tough, right?
With Wally, I mean, yeah, like, Wally has gone through this very traumatic thing because he had all that time he was spent in the Speed Force, and we don't know how long he was in there. We don't know what that really did to him, being trapped there for so long, where he was like a ghost almost, you know, he almost died. And coming back and then realizing that all these pieces are missing, you know, and at first he wasn't even, he knew a little, but now he's becoming more and more aware of what was actually taken from him, and yeah, it's making him act differently. But not only that, but in his head, he has all these conflicting memories. You know, and you find out that he has all this energy left over, all this, like, tachyon and temporal energy that's clashing with his Speed Force in his head. Like, that's why he's having those, like, he's having these seizures, essentially, right? Because it's, like, all these conflicting memories are meshing in his head. They're in conflict with each other. And so that's part of what's making him act a little irrationally and a little impulsively, you know, not completely in his head. If you go back and you read Flash 197, which is the first appearance of, well, it's Hunter Zolomon becoming Zoom for the first time.
Right.
In that story, Hunter says that the time energy from the cosmic treadmill exploding is in his head, and it's making him act irrationally. It was jumbling his thoughts, and that's part of what made him become Zoom, right? A lot of that's what's happening to Wally. He's having that same problem where all these energies are in his head, and they're bouncing around in there, and it's causing him to sort of be a little more aggressive, act a little out of character, because he is going through something horrible, but there's also something broken in his head, which is what Commander Cold told him in issue one.
Right, and you mentioned Rebirth already. You know, obviously this is still tying back into that.
Yeah.
And really tying into Jeff's story, right, for the larger, and I think I remember you and Jeff talking about when Rebirth first happened, that Flash is one of the books. If you want to understand the Rebirth, Flash is one of those books you need to pay attention to. You're still kind of unfolding that story.
Yeah, I'm still trying to. I mean, that's definitely Jeff's story, and I don't really like to comment too much on Jeff's story.
Right.
Like, I don't want to talk about somebody else's story. But, you know, he has this big plan that he's building toward, and it's like, this is a small piece of this major DCU story.
Yeah, we really haven't seen this kind of adversarial relationship between Barry and Wally before.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there was a story where you and Tom were asking people in line, like, what made you want to tell this story? What, did it come out of that idea that so many people had different
it came
favorite
out of
Flashes?
So really what was going on was that, I mean, look at the end of Flashpoint and the beginning of Rebirth and New 52, like, how could they not come into conflict?
Right.
And here's the thing, dude. Let me ask you this question. You've got an argument with your best friend.
Of course.
Barry Allen and Wally West are the two nicest guys in the world. But one of the things they're really bad at, I think, with each other in particularly, is they're too easy to forgive and forget sometimes. And
right.
I think they always brush the tension they feel with each other under the carpet, you know? And they're both such like the nicest guys in the world to a fault. Eventually that's gonna build up, you know? Mm-hmm. Those tensions are gonna explode at some point. And it's like, I think there's power in the idea of showing something you've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like showing the two of them have this real argument about something very real and very frustrating. And it's like, there had to be some kind of repercussions at some point for what happened, right? So we had all these conversations about it. And I remember talking to Tom about it and talking to a couple other creators about it, everyone being like, yeah, that makes sense, but how are you going to do it? And going back and forth, trying to figure it out. And then a lot of stuff just kind of naturally came through when we were always working on the book. And I had been working on the book for about a while, but I remember right around after The Button.
Okay.
And I was working on the Reverse Flash story, and mm-hmm. Wally was going to be part of that story, and we ended up moving him out of it and putting him in the Grodd story. But we started having all these conversations about it, and I was at this convention with a bunch of people, and like Scott and James and Tom, like we're all just hanging out, and Dan, and having all these conversations. And I remember leaving this, we were just talking about, I don't know, how to do big story right now, right? And I remember walking away from that and being like, you know, Barry versus Wally's never been done before. How can I do it, have it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's one thing that DC's really good about. You can't just go to them and be like, I have a crazy idea. They're going to tell what's the story.
Right.
And so I went and had a meeting with them after that. And I remember sitting there being like, listen, I have this idea. It's crazy. You might hate it. This is what I want to do. And they were like, oh, no, we love it. They were like, what's the story? Why? Why would they fight? And I started explaining why. My first thing we started talking about was the iris of it, you know, that mm-hmm. it was like, that's the thing they have in common, is always iris.
Right.
But then the conversation started coming around to what happened with Flashpoint, you know, and the missing kids, and it's like, what would Wally do to try to get these people back, and would Barry stop him, and why would Barry stop him, why would Barry be concerned, and sort of going into that idea of the anger there, and being two people who are still friends, but they're just having this, like, colossal disagreement.
Right.
So yeah, I just really wanted to try to find a way to, yeah, just find
you
a way
to make sense and get to tell your crazy story.
Yeah, tell my crazy story. But the thing that's funny is all the pieces were already there for me before I even came, you know?
Right.
I just had to find a way to exploit them.
Sometimes it happens like that, though. You get an idea for a story, and you're like, man, I can't believe it makes so much sense. I can't believe nobody's done it before.
No one's done it before. Mm-hmm. No one's ever done Barry versus Wally before. And the closest you get, dude, is Return of Barry Allen, which is my favorite Flash story. And I think that's something I always go back and look at, because it really is, like, you know, my favorite Flash story. My second favorite is Blitz. I think if somebody looks at my work, they can probably tell. Like, if you look at Running Scared has a lot of DNA in Return of Barry Allen. And then if you look now at this, you can see there's some. Look at Flash 46, which just obviously has DNA in Blitz. And Scott Collins, true. Both Blitz and Flash 46, so it's like, it's there on purpose.
For sure.
But yeah.
For sure. Well, anything else you want to tease our listeners with about Flash 4?
Well, I mean, one thing I keep telling people is that, you know, Flash 4 really is, it's like chapter one, you know? It's really act one of a really big story. And so there's some parts that get resolved, some things don't get resolved, there's changes in the Flash mythology. But Barry and Wally's story and what happens there will continue past Flash 4. And I think people will see, as we're getting closer to the ending, and then when we get to the ending, you'll start to see those pieces and how it really is going to be the beginning of something big in the DC Universe.
Yeah, and let's touch on that super fast. I know you're busy, fans are coming up, which is awesome. But
that's okay.
Justice League No Justice wraps up May 30th. Wednesday, May
30th. Next Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah, and then we've got Justice League 1 and 2 in June.
Yep.
And then we've got your Justice League Odyssey 7-11. Really easy to remember.
Yeah. It's the same day as Flash 50. So
oh,
before
awesome.
San Diego Comic-Con. Yeah.
Awesome. So how excited are you to kind of dip your toe into you've already have been, right?
Justice League.
This big story.
I mean, yeah, I've always wanted to write the Justice League, and I think it's fun to do something different with this team. I've never really explored a lot of, like, I've never done a book that's really this much space stuff. And so it's interesting how you have all these characters that are going out and exploring the space stuff at the same time as, like, I'm exploring the space stuff and getting to get out there and kind of do a book like this. I mean, my first real experience writing the Justice League, I mean, I guess I did some, like, custom publishing stuff that was, like, in cereal boxes. But, you know, I did Justice League versus Suicide Squad. And I remember being, like, really nervous about team books, but working on Justice League versus Suicide Squad, which had three teams, because you had Justice League, Suicide Squad, but then you also had Max's team. Yep. You know, the original Suicide Squad, and it's like all that stuff. I really kind of had a renewed passion for the Justice League, not just because I love those characters, but wanting to write them. And so since then, because I've worked on every event DC's done pretty much in the mm-hmm. last 2 years, you know, because it was like I went from working on the DC Rebirth and the Flash Rebirth, and then working on Justice League vs. Suicide Squad, and then I worked on The Button, and then I worked on Metal, and then I worked on No Justice and Flash Forward. Like, I've gone literally, it may not seem this way, but in work-wise, I've gone from one to the other, like, immediately.
Right.
And able to build all this stuff up, and it's like, now I get to do a book like Justice League Odyssey, and just have fun with these characters in spaces you've, like, never seen before.
And how's it working with Stefan Sedgwick?
Oh, it's awesome. He's great. Like, he's such a creative guy, and he has so much energy, and his work is beautiful. He's a lot of fun to work with. Yeah, his stuff is beautiful.
Yeah, I can't believe how fast he is, too, for his...
I know, he's crazy fast. It makes me nervous he's so fast at times. So, yeah, he's really great.
Well, thanks for taking the time, Josh.
Yeah, no problem.
If anybody wants to follow social media so they know when everything's coming out, where's the best place to find you?
I mean, the best place to always get anything with me is just on Twitter. That's pretty much the site where I do all the promo stuff. So it's just Williamson_Josh.
Okay, and listeners, I'll put a link to Josh's Twitter in the show notes. You can go there and check it out. Thanks again.
Right on. Thank you.